No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site for the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host with us tonight, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation, Arizona Cardinals site, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast, Seth. It was a carnage. It was, you know, Doug Baldwin thinks it should be illegal, but Thursday night was a loss, and it was all sorts of carnage, and we're left to pick up the pieces after another Cardinals loss. They couldn't do it, even though they could have done it, actually.
Yeah, it was one of those things, and you know, not only did they lose, but they lost, and you know, we'll get to that. But it was one of those games where Seattle won the game, and I don't think anybody won the war. And when it, you know, all is said and done, based off the injury report that we've seen now.
So what we've got the show tonight, recording on a Tuesday night, so maybe it's a day, but whenever you're listening to it, thank you as always, as you can find us all over the internet. But the Cardinals lose to the Seattle Seahawks on Thursday night, 22-16. Drew Stanton gets the start. A litany of injuries on both sides of the ball will occur for both teams. And, you know, since then, Drew Stanton has a knee injury that could keep him out of the game. DJ Humphrey's done for the year, knee injury. Tyvon Branch, done for the year, knee injury. Ifeanyi Moma, done for the rest of the year, breaks his leg, and it messes up his ankle too. Richard Sherman on the Seattle side of the ball, he blows up his Achilles. It was everything you worry about Thursday night football enhanced 3-4-5-fold. And ultimately, the Cardinals had a chance. They get a 22, they lose 22-16, and now they regroup as they get ready to take on the Houston Texans. The word is that Drew Stanton is unlikely to start this week, which means for all you Cardinals fans out there who have been waiting and waiting for the Blaine Gabbert show, welcome. The Blaine Gabbert show is here, whatever that means for us. We finally get to see, in fact, what that is. So what do we have in store for the show? We're going to talk about what we learned in the game against the Seahawks. We're going to talk about the injury carnage, what it means moving forward, players who step in, what that means for the Cardinals and the rest of the season, even beyond. We'll talk about Blaine Gabbert and, well, kind of what happens if we have some situations, and we're going to talk about their next matchup this weekend coming up against on the road against the Houston Texans, a team also in a not such a great situation since losing to Deshaun Watson. So that's what we're going to talk about on this show. And before we get started on the first topic, we'd like to tell you again of like we did on our last show about our friends at Harrys.com, where you can get yourself a great shave at a great price, at a very reasonable price. I told you about last week how I made the switch. I've been using electric razor for years. I figured that might as well use electric razor instead of the cheap with disposable blades, which aren't that good, and I didn't want to pay for the expensive blades. I made the switch to Harry's. High quality blades. It gives me a really, really close shave. Love it. My wife loves it. I love the way it feels. I love the quality of the razors, the blades themselves. They're really good. And they're super cheap as well. And we're so confident, Harry's so confident that you're going to love the blades. They're going to give you a trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/cred. We're going to have to pay $3 for shipping. So here's what you need to do. You need to claim your free trial offer from Harry's. That's a $13 value for free when you sign up. Again, just $3 for shipping. You get the razor handle. You get 5 precision engineer blades with a lubricating strip. It comes with a trimmer blade. You get some shave gel. You get a travel blade cover. And, you know, whether it's going to be for you, for those of you looking to get to holiday shopping early, you can also pick up the special edition holiday sets that make great gifts. Check them out. So get your free trial or browse the holiday gifts. Make sure to go to harrys.com/CRED right now. That's harrys.com/CRED. And let's go ahead and get started. Let's talk about what we learned. What we learned in the loss to the Seattle Seahawks. Number one, what was the number one thing that you learned about what we saw, whether it's the Cardinals, whether it's the Seahawks, or whether about the players that we saw in the game?
I think the first thing that we saw was that the distance between Arizona and Seattle in terms of skill is not as great as the distance between the Cardinals quarterback situation and the Seahawks quarterback situation. And I know this is a kind of duh comment to make, but if your team is not bulletproof, and we haven't seen very many bulletproof teams over the last, 17 years, basically since the beginning of the 2000s with the Ravens and the Bucks winning the Super Bowl. So if your team's not bulletproof, you are going to struggle to win games without a high-level quarterback play. And we saw that in the game. And the reason I say bulletproof is because even when you get good enough quarterback play to win, you don't have enough playmakers to make a difference. And that's what the difference in this game was, is it wasn't that Seattle's just that much better than Arizona. It was the fact that Seattle has Russell Wilson and the Cardinals don't. And that basically accounted for the difference in the game.
Yeah. And what I saw was the number one, what I learned was that the Cardinals, even with Drew Stanton, could have and should have won that game had basically anyone on that team stepped up offensively to help outside of Larry Fitzgerald, because I mean, you can't expect Larry Fitzgerald to do more than the 10 catches, 113 yards, but there were officially five drops. I think that's what Bruce Arians said. That's what Pro Football Focus came up with, but I can count upwards to up as many as 10 balls that weren't drops, but they were combined drops or balls that simply should have been caught, because that's what they do.
That's their job. It's
their job. The receivers, if you look at it, case in point, JJ Nelson, he beats Shaquille Griffin down the sideline. He gets separation. Drew Stanton throws a beautiful ball and he just lets it go through his hands. I don't know if that counted as a drop. BA called it a drop, but he never really touched it. It just, JJ Nelson's job is to be fast and to catch the ball when it's thrown over the top. He did everything but the last part, and it more or less cost them the game, because on that fourth down play, it should be a touchdown. They should go up 14-12. Instead, they turn the ball over. There's another stupid play defensively, and they give up a field goal, and instead, it's 15-7 going to halftime. That is, even with Drew Stanton, the Cardinals should have won that game. And we should be talking about what we thought would happen if they had won, about the potential mini run that they were about to go on with the potential of lining up to face the Rams in about 3 weeks, sitting at 7-4 with a chance to potentially maybe knock off the Rams based on where you're going, but at least close that gap. And what we see now, they just didn't make plays. So I learned that if Carson Palmer's not there, their skill players disappear.
Well, but they've had problems with their skill players outside of Larry Fitzgerald, even with Carson Palmer. I mean, you look at what they've done, and it's basically been, a singular guy kind of showing up in games, not named Carson Palmer, or sorry, not named Larry Fitzgerald. We saw Jerron Brown have a nice game. We saw John Brown have a nice game. We saw Jermaine Gresham have a nice game. We saw Adrian Peterson have two nice games. But none of these guys have shown up week to week. The only guy that you would look at and go, okay, he's on pace to be, you know, a Pro Bowl player, put up top 12 stats at his position, is Larry Fitzgerald. And this isn't a shot at Larry. Larry is, by all accounts, you know, one of the probably the five greatest receivers that has ever stepped on a football field. But he's 34. There's no way that this 34-year-old, I don't care that he's one of the five greatest receivers ever in the history of the game. There's no way that this 34-year-old should be your only consistent threat on offense. Like, it's just, it's baffling. And I understand that David Johnson got hurt. That's fine. But like you said, somebody else had to step up. And what my point was earlier is that when you look at Drew Stanton, you see a very average quarterback. And you see a guy that needs his team to help him. And this game highlighted that there was nobody on offense outside of Larry Fitzgerald that could help Drew Stanton. And that's what the concern is. And that's the disappointment because, you know, maybe a guy like Russell Wilson or, you know, even a Carson Palmer can put that ball in a position more consistently for the guys to make plays. But when a guy like Drew Stanton does put the ball in a position to make plays, your receivers have to make the play. They have to. They can't miss. They can't drop. You know, I had it as six passes, so call it five, six. It doesn't matter. So a guy misses three throws, and you know, Bruce Arians said he missed one throw. I had him down for three. And then you compound that by six drops, you're talking nine missed opportunities on offense. That's on offense. And some of them in the same drive where they had a chance, you know, two plays in a row to
Fitzgerald caught 10 passes.
Yeah. And so
the receivers combined for five on the season. Larry Fitzgerald has 60 receptions. All the other receivers on the entire roster combine through nine games for 67 catches.
And that's, I mean, again, I don't want to take anything away from Larry Fitzgerald, what he's done in his career and what he continues to do. But that is, yes, that's a testament to how great he is, but that's also a testament just to how bad the rest of those guys are right now.
And Andre Ellington's still the number two receiver, and he missed a game. He barely played in two others since Adrian Peterson came to the roster, and so you had him who basically he's played in eight games, I think it was, but he's really only been a significant part of the offense in six games. And he's still the number two receiver on the team.
And so that goes again to the point of these guys. Like, if you can't step up and make plays, then, and you know, it's game 10. It's way past the, okay, let's make some moves, let's make some changes stage of things. But basically, you're at the point where you can't trust these guys in 2018. Like, and to that point, now you're looking at a lot of problems because you don't have any wide receivers now. So, you know, that's what the disappointment is. The disappointment's not just in this season. The disappointment is now you literally are going into your off season, and which you and I still think that they're probably going to end up winning three more games, finishing 7-9. And, you know, in that 12 to 16 range of the draft. And so you're going to go into the draft. You're going to have a middle of the road pick, and you're not going to have any wide receivers that you can count on, and you don't even know if Larry Fitzgerald's coming back. So that's what is disappointing about this, because I thought even after the Tyvon Branch injury, I thought that the defense showed us something that they haven't in the last couple weeks.
They were tough. And here's one of the things I learned, and it's kind of this is an epiphany after the game. They almost beat the Seahawks. The Cardinals are an almost good team. They're not a bad team. They have problems, but they're not a bad team. They're almost good. That's kind of been the case. They're almost good. Their defense almost made the plays. They got five sacks again. They get, the pass rush is doing better. Like, through seven games, they had 13 sacks, eight of them from Chandler Jones. They've had five sacks in each of the last two games. And now they've gotten eight of those last 10 from guys other than Chandler Jones. So the pass rush is there. But then it's the one sack they can't get where Russell Wilson is a wizard. So we learn once again, Russell Wilson is magic and a wizard. He runs around. No play is supposed to last 9 seconds in the pocket. So he scrambles. They almost sack him twice, and then he hucks the ball up. Antoine Bethea almost intercepts the pass, and instead it's a completion to Doug Baldwin, who runs 50-something yards only to be knocked out of bounds. So the Cardinals, you know, they almost complete a pass to J.J. Nelson. They almost sack Russell Wilson. It was just a bunch of almosts, and that's all that's been this year, is they're almost good. And I think that's kind of been the case of the last year and a half. They are close to good, but just not quite there. They're a team that should be good, but just almost misses it each on a consistent basis.
Right, and that comes down to a couple things. Either one, again, you have a quarterback that makes up for it. Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. I think we were even seeing that from Deshaun Watson. Or you just don't have as much. You don't have enough very good players. You have a good amount of good players. You have some average players. You have some bad players. I mean, every team's got a couple bad players on their team, but you just don't have enough very good players to make up that difference, to change it. And so when you look at the Cardinals, when you see, you know, we talk about their pass rush and the improvement of it, and it has improved, and you look at it, and a lot of the time, or, you know, these two games, it's come against teams with bad offensive lines. And that's fine. So their bad is worse than what had been bad for the Cardinals, which was, again, their pass rush, outside of Chandler Jones, obviously. When you look at the Cardinals' offensive line, it was starting to look better. I mean, it just was. It had been. It was, what, four games in a row of the same guys starting. Obviously, the start to that run was not what anybody wanted, but after that, it's been okay. And then again, disaster strikes, and then all of a sudden, you know, I thought Wetzel did a good enough job, but you can't lose your starting left tackle, and the Seahawks showed the same thing. You can't lose your starting left tackle and then just have somebody step in and expect everything to be A-okay. And that's kind of where the Cardinals are right now. It's been a combination of, you know, a couple things. And I hate to use injuries as an excuse because everybody's got injuries. But when you look at the significant injuries the Cardinals have had, it seems like the fact that they're in these games is just kind of – it shows – what a nice job Bruce Arians and his staff had done, even much to the chagrin of some who are not completely satisfied with Arians and his staff.
You know, to wrap up with what we learned with the Seahawks, coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, we'll talk about, well, what does all the injury situation mean? What does that mean moving forward? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and I used the words a few times already. It was carnage. The injury sustained on both sides of the ball. The Seahawks finally get themselves a left tackle in Dwayne Brown. Then he gets hurt. You know, they were without Earl Thomas. Richard Sherman, he's done for the year. Tears his Achilles. He knew it going in that, you know, he's tough. And the quick turnaround, obviously the whole Thursday night thing, there isn't any significant change in the type of injuries, but it just, the eye test says, even these are freak and fluke injuries that happen. You have to think that there's something to it where your body, even though it's not, these are joints and ligaments, it's just something, the fact that you are putting it under that trauma again quicker than normal, it's likely contributing to that. Now, at the same time, players are getting paid for, you know, if that's Thursday night football is really a thing they want to get rid of, they got to be willing to take the bite of that out of the money, because the league is getting gobs of money because of Thursday night football. And as a result, the players are getting gobs more money because of it. And so if they're going to give that up, they're going to have to understand they're going to take a hit in the pocketbook to do it. But that's the big picture. So the Seattle loses Dwayne Brown. They lose Richard Sherman. The Cardinals, first quarter, down goes DJ Humphries after, what, five plays? And his injury wasn't as bad as it could have been. But once again, we're seeing a promising player. He missed time with concussion last year. He had the MCL issue at the beginning of this year. He has his knee again now. The belief is that the surgery he's going to undergo will kind of fix the chronic, what ABA called it, chronic MCL. Tyvon Branch makes his third stint on injured reserve in two seasons on a, you know, he tried to defend that touchdown by Jimmy Graham, and his leg just goes out from under him. His ACL's gone, cartilage. If Ifeanyi Moma breaks his leg, it might need ankle reconstruction. But, you know, Tyvon Branch, he's been hurt before. That's been the knock over the last 5 years. If Ifeanyi Moma still hasn't finished an NFL season. It still has not. That he's been, every year he's been on a roster, he's ended up injured. And so now what? I mean, we know what the Cardinals are going to do. They're moving Jared Veldier back. John Wetzel goes to the right tackle. Then you have Buda Baker. Got Buda Baker to get now some significant playing time. And the tight end position is a bit up in the air. Momo wasn't playing a whole lot, so maybe they stick with Ricky Seals-Jones. Maybe they sign another player. There's still a roster spot that's open. They tried to bring Hakeem Vallis. Interesting thing that Ian Rappaport talked about. The Cardinals tried to bring back Hakeem Vallis, who was with the team last year, is on the Detroit Lions practice squad. They wanted to bring him back, sign him to the active roster. But the Lions, he got some leverage, and the Lions decided to pay. They're keeping him on the practice squad, but they're paying him regular, you know, active roster money. And the reason being is this, as I found out from a little bit behind the scenes, was, you know, the Detroit situation, they're developing young tight ends. The Cardinals, you know, didn't want him after training camp and didn't even bring him back. He wasn't the first tight end they called when they needed a tight end early in the season. So a situation of
sour milk.
He clearly was not wanted. He was needed, but not necessarily wanted. And it was kind of a desperation situation. And the Detroit situation is better. So there he is. He's still on the practice squad, but guess what? He doesn't get the year credited here. Get that money right up front. And they believe that he's going to develop into something there in Detroit as well. So what happens moving forward aside from, the bigger one? Oh, yeah, Drew Stanton. And hurts his knee late in the game on what is a penalty. It is a dirty play. Whether Sheldon Richardson intended on doing it, he went low on Drew Stanton, was flagged for it. But if you look at the replay, so lucky. I don't know what it was. If he felt it, and so he felt the pressure. He felt the bodies flying around his legs, because he's got the throw off. His right foot, he managed to get off the ground, And you see his leg moves awkwardly, and he was limping after the play. But if Richardson hits him with his foot planted, his knee explodes. We're talking, from what it looked like to me, if Sheldon Richardson hits him with his foot planted on the ground, it's Tyrann Mathieu knee type thing. And he still finished the rest of the game. Now, doesn't look like he's going to play, so we now get Blaine Gabbert. So what do you see with these positions moving forward? Let's start with the quarterback position.
So, I mean, we talked about it. I mean, we said it jokingly. We said it, you know, jokingly, but it was one of those situations where we knew it was coming that Blaine Gabbert was going to get playing time.
And because Drew Stanton, every time he's had playing time, he's gotten hurt.
Yes. And it wasn't, you know, we weren't saying this as a jinx. We weren't saying this as a hope this happens. We were saying this is the reality. I mean, every time he's been an extended starter, he's gotten hurt. So we knew it was coming. We just didn't know when. And you combine that with the fact that, you know, the Cardinals offensive line hasn't been great type thing. And, you know, you're in a bad situation. So now we get Blaine Gabbert. Maybe. They haven't really announced it yet.
it's up in the air. Steve Keim said, well, first, John Gamadora here locally said that the people he talked to, they haven't ruled out Stanton. Steve Keim wasn't willing to say that Stanton couldn't go. BA said if Stanton's healthy enough, he's their guy. He's definitely going to play. It's a matter of being able to protect himself so that he doesn't get hit and, you know, kill his knee. But Mike Jarecki here locally said that the sources tell him that they expect Gabbert to play. Basically, it's a case where Stanton's going to do everything he can to play. He's tough, but he's just not going to be able to because it's going to be risky enough to be out there that his knee could lead to serious injury.
Yeah, and that's the reality of the situation now. So, and if you're Drew Stanton, and I get that you're wanting this opportunity because you've never, you know, got the opportunity to start, and you think to yourself, man, if I lead the Cardinals, I mean, I was 5-3 in 2014. If I lead the Cardinals to another, however many games, you know, 7-3 record over the 10 games that I'm playing, or however many it was, 6-3 record, whatever. And the Cardinals, you know, go 10-6 and make the playoffs. I got to get a chance, right? Brian Hoyer got a chance. Josh McCown got another chance. So I got to get a chance, right? And so, you know, I think from that standpoint, Stanton's going to want to try to get out there. He's going to want to try and prove that he is good enough to get a starting job at, I think he'll be, what, 33 next year, 34?
Yeah.
So, you know, at 33, give him a three-year, $15 million, $21 million type deal, and, you know, let him take the reins, so to speak. And so he's going to do everything he can to get out there because this is his shot. This is his, you know, opportunity. On the flip side, this is what we've talked about. We were going to see Blaine Gabbert once Drew Stanton, once Carson Palmer was injured. We were going to see Blaine Gabbert, and not because of bad play from Drew Stanton. It was going to happen. It's what Stanton does. And so, right. And so now you get a chance to see a guy that, you know, there's no pressure. And maybe there is pressure. Maybe I am not seeing the pressure. But, you know, I went back and I wrote an article today, and I linked to some really good stuff from Big Cat Country, the Jacksonville Jaguars SB Nation, and then Niners Nation, obviously the San Francisco 49ers SB Nation account. And they both had extensive film review of Gabbert and what he has done on the field. And when you go and look at those, you see 2012, you see they've got a breakdown from 2012 that shows Gabbert and shows him missing throws, similar to what Drew Stanton, you know, the couple throws Drew Stanton missed. Same type of thing. He missed three, you know, three or four pretty easy throws that you expect an NFL quarterback to make. And you chalk that up and you say, okay, well, that was game 19 of his career. Shouldn't have, you know, should he have made the throw? Yes, but it's, you know, it's game 19. And so fast forward to these 2015 breakdowns, and you watch these breakdowns of Drew or of Blaine Gabbert in against Arizona, ironically enough, and Seattle. And it was maybe his best two-game stretch of his career. And he completed over 63% of his passes. I think he had a 3-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. He was 0-2, but, you know, that's beside the point. He played well enough. And so then you look at that and you go, okay, why was that different? And then why did 2016 happen and all of a sudden he sucked again? Not just sucked, but he was really, really bad again. Like Jacksonville Jaguars bad again, where Football Outsider said he was the worst starting quarterback in the history of their DVOA. So every starting quarterback that we've seen for the Arizona Cardinals that has sucked has not been as bad as Blaine Gabbert was in his time in Jacksonville over nearly 40, you know, over 30 starts, or but right around 30 starts. Which
seems absurd considering we saw Ryan Lindley and Nax Hall.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
So when you look at that and you go, okay, all right. So what happened? So you saw the progression from that 2012 to the 2015, and then you watched that 2016 breakdown by Niners Nation's David Newman, and you watch it and you go, oh my God, is this the 2012 tape or is this the 2016 tape? What is going on? And that's that unfortunate thing, and that's what we don't know yet. Was it the fact that in 2015 they were 3-and-whatever or 2-and-whatever when he took over? You know, I think he went 3-and-5 that year. They had 8 games left. They would have had to have gone undefeated to even have a chance, because that was the year the Cardinals and the Seahawks both were really good and made the playoffs. And, you know, so they would have, you know, it would have had to have been a miracle by Gabbert, and he played well enough. That's the other thing, is he didn't play poorly, but there was, it seemed almost like there was no pressure. Jim Tomsula was going to get fired. Everybody knew it. You know, the whole staff was going to get fired. Everybody knew it. So then he wins the starting job. He wins a quarterback competition over Colin Kaepernick, and he comes out and he kind of craps the bed again. And you just go, okay, so what happened? Now, I've seen a lot of people comment and say, well, Chip Kelly's offense, blah, 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 the 49ers' weapons, blah, blah, blah. But he was significantly worse from a statistical comparison than Kaepernick in that offense.
Yeah, so, Kaepernick wasn't bad. I mean, you look at his numbers, he wasn't bad. Gabbert was bad.
And so that, again, that begs the question, what happened? What was the change and what was missed in that time period? And that, again, and so that's what my question is. Is this going to be a free-flowing kind of a guy like that plays with, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but plays without care, you know, goes out there and just has fun and plays football? Or is this going to be a guy that feels the pressure of, holy crap, this could be my last shot. Like, this could be it. I start on a road game against completely devastated Texans team on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. I have to start, and get out early and show people that I still have it. Or is he going to go, doesn't matter. Everything I do is just gravy from this point on, and it doesn't matter. And that's the thing. I think if he plays with that, I don't have to worry mentality, that you're going to see a guy that can make some plays, that can run an offense. I think if he starts to get into his own head and worry about the game being too big. And in fairness to him, it might be his last shot. So yeah, that's kind of pressure. Let's not lie. That's some pressure. Then maybe he does have some problems. So I'm interested to see what comes out with Gabbert, because there's never been a question about his skill. That's why three teams have taken chances on him. And to be fair, San Francisco and Arizona took no chance on him, but that's why three teams have given him a chance. But the question's always been, from a mental aspect, can he minimize the mistakes? Can he make the plays that need to be made that a starting quarterback in the NFL should be making? And so that's what I don't know. And then you compound that with the fact that, again, this Cardinals offense just right now doesn't look very good. From a talent standpoint, you have six drops in a game, and you're like, and now you're back to having a questionable offensive line. And now you go, oh crap, is this going to ruin Gabbert again? Like, no. is this fair for him? Because that's the other thing, is it fair for him?
Well, at this point, what are you going to do? Go with Matt Barkley? that's why they signed Blaine Gabbert. I mean, ideally, that he was never going to play this year. That was, I believe that was the plan the entire time. Have him learn the system. They brought him in this year for 2018, knowing that if he doesn't play, he learns, he's going to want to stick around. He's going to have some stability, and he wouldn't have any tape for anyone to want him. And so he just come back, and they still have high hopes for him. But really, that's the only option there was. Now, if you look at the offensive line, granted, you're going to see a little bit of an adjustment. Luckily for the Cardinals, they have a Jared Valdir on their team who now they can just, since they know that DJ's not going to be back, they just move him over to the left side, a position he's played at a fairly high level throughout his career. The first week might be an adjustment since he was finally adjusting to right tackle. And then you're just left with right tackle problems with John Wetzel, who's a better left tackle than right tackle. But putting Valdir at left tackle and Wetzel at right tackle is probably the best scenario for everyone involved. And Wetzel has been capable. Now, what does that mean for Gabbert in pass protection? What does that mean for the running game? That we'll have to wait and see, because now luckily with Valdir, who is a stronger run blocker than pass blocker, they can continue to focus on running over the left side with Adrian Peterson. And, hopefully, Jadeveon Clowney does not embarrass Wetzel or Valdir too badly in this next weekend.
Well, and that's the thing. So I think that was the only move to make at this point. You're not, again, I think you hit it on the head. If you're 2 weeks, maybe three, you can leave Wetzel at left tackle, but,
and that's because you don't want to move Valdir around like that, right? Because flipping him to the right side was a project.
And he sucked for the first 5 weeks. We don't need to pull punches. He was completely awful. I mean, all of us were wondering, why didn't you retire? And so now the last four games, he's been actually very good. And so it just took some time. It was a complete adjustment. We knew it was going to be an adjustment. We just didn't realize how long the adjustment was going to take.
Right.
So now, he's playing at a high level. Like you said, this is exactly what you wanted to see. And so now you just wait and kind of see what you have with him at left tackle now. And you hope that Wetzel can – I mean, he's going to give up sacks. It's going to happen. He's not physically strong enough. He's not, he's not a agility-killing type of offensive tackle. But – the question
is a good guy to have on the team. He's a really a very solid backup to have on your team.
The question, yeah, because he can play left tackle, he can play left guard, he can go into right guard, and he can play right tackle. And now the question is, the question is the moments, and that was one of the things that we saw on Thursday night. Is Wetzel didn't give up a big play in a big moment. He gave up a sack. I mean, let's be completely honest. He got embarrassed on a sack by a guy that hasn't played
in so bad. Yes, Deion Jordan. Deion Jordan, a huge bust to begin with.
Yeah,
so they made him look like an all-pro.
And so, you know, it was a bad play. It just was. It happens. But he didn't have the bad play in a big moment, and that's what is key when you have a situation like this. Is that yes, John Wessel's going to get beat. He'll probably give up. You know, in the last 7 games, you know, we'll throw in the game because he basically played the whole Seattle game. In the last 8 games, he'll probably give up 8 sacks. It's probably going to happen. The key is going to be in those moments that it won't happen. I think the worst injury was, and you feel bad for a guy like Stanton because it's happened before. You feel bad for a guy like DJ Humphreys because now we're in year 3 and he's never played a full season. Not, you know, 15 wasn't his fault. Well, 15 wasn't his decision. 16, you know, and then 17, again, another injury. You start to be concerned. You're not going to do anything about it, but you start to be concerned about the potential injury plague that follows this poor kid around. But the worst one was Tyvon Branch. And the reason it's the worst one is because for, I believe it was the 5th time in his career, and it's now in year 9, Tyvon Branch will, and actually it's technically the 6th time because he went on it twice last year, but 5th time he will end his season on IR. And he was playing at a near Pro Bowl level for the first time in his career. Because
yeah, he was making tackles everywhere. The plays he made down the field in recovery, it was great. He made great plays.
And you just feel for a guy like this that has never, you know, been able to stay healthy. Nobody's fault, but he's just never been able to stay healthy. And, you know, so he got to game 9 of a career year in a contract year where he might have been able to pick up, you know, a nice 3-year, $12 million, you know, $15 million deal to kind of end his career on. And instead he goes on IR again. And this is the part that I feel bad about. And I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way, but how many fans are going to be upset? And that's the sad part, because now everybody's saying, eh, at least we get to see Budda Baker. It's kind of like the Drew Stanton thing. Like, eh, we get to see Blaine Gabbert now. Eh, we get to see Budda Baker. Like, so it's these things where these guys are playing well. They're not, you know, they're not hurting their team. That's why they're holding off these more intriguing, you know, interesting younger guys. And then it's something out of their control that benches them. And so when you look at it, obviously the biggest one is going to be Blaine Gabbert. Can he at least give you what Drew Stanton gave you and keep you in football games, give you an opportunity to win football games? That's the question for Gabbert. But now we are all expecting that Budda Baker's never going to come off the field again for the Cardinals. And so
and I don't know about that, though, based on what we saw, unless they change the rule. I think there's kind of two positions that you have to wonder about. It's not just Budda, but now it's Antoine Bethea, because unless they change things up, because Tyvon Branch was not coming off the field and Bethea was coming in as the third safety in nickel set. So he was playing. But when Branch went out, Bethea didn't leave the field and Budda came in as the sub guy. Which means now you've got an older Bethea who's going to play every play, and you've got the young guy who still makes some mistakes, playing a significant role. Now he did make plays. Actually, we kind of got the whole Budda Baker experience all at once. Played great on special teams. He was a bullet down the field to keep Doug Baldwin from scoring that touchdown. 6 tackles, and the knock on him. an easy interception he dropped.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's been a, I mean, that's been a problem since college, is that he doesn't, you know, force a ton of turnovers, and so he does everything else.
And so I'm not as concerned about that, and but it does test the depth. Tight end, I'm not terribly worried about. Moma barely played, and whether they use a tight end, but or whether they use like Will Holden as their jumbo tight end
blocking guy. But you do feel bad for Moma as well,
because absolutely
third season, third time finishing the season on IR. Like, you don't, I mean, you obviously you don't wish injury on anybody, but you just wish these guys could finish a season and really kind of show who they are as players, because they're now to the, you're now to the point where, you know, Moma is injured a different injury for the third time. And you just, I mean, yeah, you feel bad for the guy.
Yeah. And you know, that's enough with the injuries. It's going to, it's the only thing, I say this jokingly, not jokingly, is all that's left is really to happen is to see Troy Nicholas go down again with another injury, because that hasn't happened yet. And hopefully it doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, can we get one of these injury plagued, I won't say injury prone, but can we get one of these injury plagued guys a full season, please?
That'd be like, fantastic. We would.
Yeah. So
enough of that. So, coming up next on Rise Up C Rep for the last part, we'll talk about, you know, what could happen with Gabbert longer term this season, if he plays well, if he doesn't play well. And then talk about the game against the Texans. We'll wrap up the show on this last part of Rise Up C Red. We're back on Rise Up C Red. Blaine Gabbert. We already talked a lot about him, but pose the scenario. Stanton misses. He's going to be out, what, two games? Gabbert's got a, you know, going, looking at the schedule, that game in Houston is very winnable. Like, not that the Condors are going to win. I think they will. But it's a very winnable game, considering just how anemic Houston looks with Tom Savage at quarterback. And then you've got the elite-level defense of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So, you know, Gabbert has the potential of looking okay against Houston, and then you're going to have to wonder what's going to happen against the Jaguars at home when fans are on, you know, they're at home, he's playing there. But what if Gabbert plays well, they somehow get two wins and Stanton is healthy? Should the Cardinals keep riding the Gabbert train, or should they go back to Stanton? Because it's not like Stanton has played poorly. He led them to a win, and they should have led them to another win. If Gabbert plays well in both those games and Stanton is back healthy, should the Cardinals go back to him?
No, but with the caveat of wins mean less at this point than what I want to actually see from these guys on the field. So, and yes, I understand the Cardinals are technically still 1.5 games out of the playoffs. I'm aware. But I want to see Gabbert show something. People can lament the performances of Drew Stanton the last two games, but outside of completion percentage, he was doing everything that you want a quarterback to do. He wasn't turning the ball over. You know, he was setting his team up to make plays. That's kind of what you want your quarterback to do. You understand that he's not Carson Palmer. He's not going to be a guy that, you know, makes huge plays. But if he can be a guy that puts his team in a position to win games, that's really all that you can ask for from him and these guys. And so similar to that with Gabbert, if Gabbert's a guy that, you know, can go 15 of 28 and throw one or two touchdowns, I'm okay with that, as long as it's a 15 of 28 with no interceptions. I, you know, that's kind of the caveat. You don't want him to come in and go 15 of 30 with three interceptions and no touchdowns. The completion percentage, I think, would be better if the Cardinals had a better receiving crop. even in this season, Carson Palmer was down to 61% completion percentage. I believe that was the lowest, or right, second lowest, so same as he was in last year when the Cardinals had problems at receiver. Not shocking, you know, with that. So that's the main thing. You know, anything he gives you above that, I think becomes the question, doesn't become, do you bring him back? Because I think if he can show you a similar ability to what Stanton showed you, I think it's a no-brainer. You bring him back as your backup quarterback. That is what you want as a backup quarterback, is that they give you a chance to win games. They're not going to win you many games. You know, they're not going to go out there and become Case Keenum, but they might be able to keep you in games and allow you to win games when, you know, you have normal Case Keenum, not Minnesota Vikings against the Washington Redskins Case Keenum. So that's what you're looking for in Gabbert. And so, you know, obviously if you get a Stanton-esque performance from Gabbert, then I think you re-sign him anyways, because, oh, well, this could be a guy that we can bring in. You know, if Palmer decides not to come back, we can give him the same kind of opportunity that we planned to give Stanton in 2013. And then, you know, if Palmer does come back, he's the primary backup. And now you go into the draft thinking, okay, we have a 1-2 set that we're comfortable with. Can we find a quarterback to groom under Palmer? Obviously, if Palmer leaves, that changes things a bit. But I still think Gabbert is the guy that comes back if he performs at the same level. Because the thing is, if you get Drew Stanton but 8 years younger, that's fine, because now you have a backup quarterback for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Maybe Gabbert has aspirations of starting again. Maybe he wants just another 1 year deal, you know, with the idea that Palmer's not coming back, I'm going to get a chance to compete to start, and then, you know, we'll figure it out from there. Fine, whatever. But I think that's what you see. If he bombs, if he goes, you know, nuclear Gabbert, obviously it is what it is. That's the nice thing about this, is that it's going to give you a look at a young quarterback who's shown flashes on two different teams, that maybe he has something, whether it's just being a backup or a potential starter, he has something to offer.
And you know, moving forward, I think, you know, if Gabbert plays okay, I think that's going to be the plan all along, is to bring him back. In 2 weeks, if he's done well, unless Gabbert has lit up defenses, I think I would still put Gabbert back. I mean, bring Stanton back, because, you know, maybe things change if Gabbert lights it up, but they still lose games. Maybe they decide to go that route. Although that would still be a tough sell in that locker room, considering every player in that locker room trusts Drew Stanton. They know what he can do, and they've seen him perform. But yeah, and I'm intrigued about the Gabbert play. I'm worried. I'm not going to lie. I'm worried, because at least with Stanton, you know that there's a level of steadiness with which he will play. Gabbert might be familiar with the offense. Steadiness has never been a trait that you could use to describe Gabbert.
Right, and that's the concern, but I think that's also what the mystery and the intrigue is about. Yeah. Is it's not, you know, the whole thing with Stanton is that you just said it. He's a known. It's a known commodity. It's not an interesting commodity by any means. But I think people confuse that idea, in that, you know, Drew Stanton in his career has basically, I mean, he's basically started one season for his entire career. I mean, he's played in 36 games, but his starting numbers, you know, are he started 15 games in his career. He is what he is. Like, he's a low to mid 50% passer. He's a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception guy. And he's a guy that can move around the pocket a little bit. He's not a guy that is going to go out there and make huge plays. He's not a guy that's going to go out there and sling the ball around 60 times, you know, complete 48 of them and throw for 400 yards and four touchdowns. That's just not who he is. He's a very, you know, he's a very poor man's Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, that's kind of who he is. And that's fine because he's a backup quarterback. He's a guy that understands the system, gets them in the correct, you know, set. He gets them in good plays and he makes plays. Yeah, he makes boneheaded plays. Yeah, he does an audible out of an obvious safety situation on the half inch line because you have a dumb punt returner and a dumb punt blocker. You know, stuff like that happens. And but that's kind of what you and I have talked about in the fact that they really need this poor guy to provide them, or not him, but they need everybody else to help this guy. Like, you can't have stupid plays like that. You just can't. You can't have a fumble on the first play, your first offensive play from scrimmage. You just can't, because this guy as a quarterback isn't good enough to overcome all of that. And that's fine because, again, he's a backup. And so people now are saying, well, put Gabbert in there. He won't do that. I hate to break it to you, but two other teams really, really disagree with that assessment. Now, maybe he's grown. Maybe he's completely different. But two other teams really disagree with that assessment.
So let's look ahead to the Texans. It's a team that is not anything like what they were with Deshaun Watson playing at an incredibly high level. But now it's back to Tom Savage, and the offense looks atrocious. The Cardinals should win this game. Where are the areas that you think you like? I mean, if you're looking across the lineup, you have to wonder, okay, are you going to put Patrick on DeAndre, or are you going to put Patrick on Will Fuller? I think probably Will Fuller might be the smarter play.
Well, it sounds like Fuller may not play.
Ah, true.
Because he's got that rib thing going on. The scary one is, and for all you fantasy football nuts, the scary thing is Bruce Ellington, who has played well the last couple of games. I believe he's the cousin of Andre Ellington. Yes,
Andre's cousin.
And
he will line up in the slots against Tyrann Mathieu, who is playing more coverage this year. That's one thing I asked him about that. So what is he being asked to do that's different this year? And it's coverage. He's asking he's playing in coverage more, and we've seen the results of that. It's been less than ideal a lot of times.
So here's the thing. Okay, so when you look at the Texans, the first thing you look at is, okay, they score a lot of points, and then you go and go, oh, no, they don't actually. Never mind. When Tom Savage is playing, they don't score very many points. Crazy enough, Deshaun Watson was so good that they're still seventh in the NFL in points scored. Crazy. That's insane to me. Anyways, when you look at it next, you go, holy crap, they give up a lot of points. 31st in the NFL in points allowed. So, first thing you think is, that's a good thing for Blaine Gabbert if he plays. It's a good thing for Drew Stanton if he plays. Bad defense. You go down the list a little more. Tied for the Cardinals in takeaway differential. Okay, so they're bad. They don't cause a lot of turnovers. That's another good thing. Rush yards per game, they run the ball pretty well, but you wonder what the disparity is with and without Deshaun Watson in there. Obviously, he added some to the run game, but then you obviously he made the defense be honest, which is more of what the importance was. But then you look at their defense and you say, holy crap, they are not good against the pass. 27th against the pass. Cardinals aren't good against the pass either. Let's be completely honest. They're 23rd, but you know, 27th against the pass, 7th against the run. They have a good run defense. So when you look at the statistical comparisons, this is kind of a mirror image team of what the Cardinals are outside of the Cardinals throw for a lot of yards and the Texans don't anymore. And the Texans scored a lot of points and the Cardinals don't. And so that's, you know, those, that's the biggest disparity, but everything else is, I mean, it's very similar. Both teams are very good against the run, not very good against the pass. They're kind of flip-flopped. The Cardinals have a really bad rushing offense. The Texans' passing offense isn't very good, and then you kind of flip that around the other way. The Cardinals' passing offense yardage-wise is good. And so when you look at all of that, you say this should be a pretty even game. But then you think about the Tom Savage factor, and you say, that guy's – I mean, when you talk about overmatched – you look at Tom Savage, I think he finally threw a touchdown pass, first of his career. And I'm not even lying. Oh, he's thrown two now. Wow. So, you know, we laughed earlier in the season, you know, he was upset that he got benched for rookie. And it's like, dude, you've started 9 games in your NFL career and you've thrown 2 touchdowns.
Sean Watson. And then that first half. And then that first half, that first game, he had 6 sacks 6 times.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he is statuesque in the pocket. That's, you know, that's a fair way to identify him. So when you look at it, their offense is just, I mean, it's not very good. They scored 7 points against the Jaguars, and that was a Deshaun Watson touchdown. They scored 14 points against the Indianapolis Colts. You're going to laugh at these numbers, 19 for 44. So 43% completion percentage from, Mr. Savage. And then he improved in the Rams game, but through 2 interceptions. So, you know, he's not a very good quarterback. He's not even on the, like, Kevin Cobb, John Skelton spectrum. He's not even in the Drew Stanton class. He's closer to that Ryan Lindley style of quarterback and talent level. Oh, and so when you look at all that, I'm with you. The Cardinals really should win this game, even though it's an early start, even though it's on the road in Houston. It's only an hour time difference. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. But the Cardinals are a different team on the road. They struggled mightily to stop a really bad San Francisco 49ers offense. Apparently better, though, since they beat the Giants yesterday. By the way, if the Cardinals lose to the Giants now, that's probably the worst loss of the Bruce Arians era, right? Like, at this point.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, the Texans, you know, the Cardinals are 2-3 away. The Texans are 2-3 at home, so there's really no, you know, advantage in that. The question becomes, and you wrote about this, and then, you know, it's always hilarious to me. Vegas doesn't even know what to do with this game.
You're right.
And that is,
the bookmakers are like, we're not gonna even give a line.
That's the Tom Savage and Blaine Gabbert factor. That's what that is. And Tom Savage, Tom Savage is an abysmal quarterback. Blaine Gabbert is a complete wild card unknown at this point. I mean, we know who he is, but he's unknown. And so I would bet you dollars to donuts if Drew Stanton was healthy, the Cardinals would probably be like 2-point favorites in this game. But
makes sense.
But without Drew Stanton healthy, I know Cardinals fans, that's hearsay because you guys think he's the worst quarterback ever. But without Drew Stanton healthy, nobody knows what to think of the Cardinals because you don't know what you're going to get from the Blaine Gabbert experience. So, I mean, in the end, that's what's going to happen. Is the Blaine Gabbert experience better than it was? And can it be, you know, something enjoyable for the Cardinals and their fans? You and I both think they will, but you and I have been really not accurate with what we thought about this season so far. So
not at all, except for the fact that Drew Stanton was going to get hurt.
And yeah, so we got that right. So,
and we were right that Carson Palmer, at the rate he was getting hit, wasn't going to make it through the season either. So we are 2 for 2.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay,
so
we're like 2 for 105. Never mind. Yeah. We're 2 for 150.
So if you have a question about quarterback injuries, we're your guys to go to. But about whether the Cardinals are going to win a game or not, I don't think anybody knows at this point if we're being completely fair.
I know they're winning this week and losing next week and maybe winning the next week. So that's kind of the – and with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You've heard a number of topics. Thanks for listening. You can find us all over social media. You can find us on Seth's site, revengeofthebirds.com, featured on cardswire.com, on Facebook, on Twitter. More importantly, if you guys are iTunes listeners, make sure to head on over to iTunes, subscribe to the show, get those shows downloaded automatically. We would love a 5-star rating if you are willing to give that. Stitcher Radio through Blog Talk Radio, through Spreaker.com, and also on Amazon's Alexa. On behalf of the Rise Up Secret Podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We're rooting for the Cardinals to get a win. Get ready for the Blaine Gabbert experience. It's coming. Hopefully it's good. Go Cardinals and rise up, Sea Red.